Howdy, folks. This is Rob Wolf. This is episode 213 of the Paleo Solution Podcast, and I am incredibly excited to welcome our guest, Coach Christopher Summer, the founder of the Gymnastics Bodies system and website. Coach, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Rob. Good morning.
Good morning. So you were getting ready to load your family up for breakfast, and I was I was elbow deep in working on my certs that I've been writing for seems like ages now. So
we're both busy, huh?
Yeah, we're launching into this from a pretty good spot, Coach. I had a heck of a time tracking down bio information on you. I know you personally as a close friend, but you've sent several athletes to national and world championships in gymnastics.
I have been a former collegiate gymnast, personally a longtime national team coach for USA Gymnastics. My responsibility was preparing athletes for our level of national team that was just under the Olympics. So they get almost all the way prepared, and then someone else, they hit about 18, takes one, puts their final polish on. Of course, train the national champions, national all-around champs. We've done our international assignments. Pretty much, except for Olympic level, about as high as it's possible to go in the sport of gymnastics.
Fantastic. Coach, I don't know if you realize this, but I believe March of this year will be the 10 years that you and I have known each other, at least, we first met in Golden, Colorado at the huge CrossFit Fitness Palooza that they had there at the Colorado police setup.
Wow. 10 years already.
Holy
my goodness.
Smokes. Yeah. So, how the time has flown. So I know that virtually, we mention you frequently on the podcast, particularly interestingly, when I'm talking to someone like Jim Laird or John Wellborn, when I start talking about periodization, planning, progressions, all of that type of stuff. I think a lot of us kind of, we had an initial kind of meeting around the CrossFit scene because of, the inclusion, at least in theory, of gymnastics, Olympic weightlifting, sprint modalities, and stuff like that. And then we've all kind of migrated and gone various directions from that initial meeting. But Coach, you've been working on this Gymnastics Bodies. You have a whole online curriculum, you have books, but I think that the first time that you really had some significant kind of online exposure was it a two-part piece that you did covering the planche and the front lever for T Nation?
It was Pavel had contacted me, and I was neck deep in our national team training, and he asked me to write a chapter for a book, and he's a good friend, so I told him no. I'm busy, I don't have time for this. And he's a persistent guy, and finally I caved and I said okay. So we threw together a little 10-page chapter for him. Went out, took a little bitty handheld camera, shot some photos real quick with my athletes, sent it off to Pavel, and promptly forgot about it.
And so that went up on Dragon Door originally.
Well, it went up on Dragon Door. The story goes that Pavel sent me a note. I had done nothing on the internet at all at that time. He sent me a note letting know that it was too good. He didn't want to include it as a chapter. He was going to do a standalone article. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, whatever. That's fine. I went back to training. And a couple weeks later, I opened my email one morning, and I had 300 emails in there, everyone asking about this doggone article that Pavel had published as a separate instead of a chapter. And that was the beginning.
And that was probably like 2002, 2003?
Right in there. Right, yeah, in it's there. Been yeah. It's been a good long while ago.
So, for some folks, particularly if they come from a more barbell oriented background, I'm clearly biased in this. I don't have any type of legit gymnastics background. I've tinkered with some ring work. My main, I guess, kind of exposure to something that would be kind of gymnastics derivative was doing some capoeira, which was a ton of handstand work, handstand balancing, backbend, some really basic acrobatics and stuff like that. But even that level of exposure that I had, you know, I feel like it provided such an advantage for me, both from kind of structural integrity, particularly like in my shoulders and my thoracic spine and all that. And now I'm doing some competing in old dude Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and it's remarkable how much more mobile I am. And I'm willing to do some things that, you know, most people are not willing to do while grappling. I'll do cartwheel passes. And if somebody's got almost has like some sort of a collar choke or something like that on me, I'm totally comfortable, you know, popping up into a headstand, spinning on the person's belly and then coming back down. And I mean, for the folks that I roll with, they're kind of like, holy cats. Like, you know, it's almost like some Spider-Man type stuff. And I mean, my skill set is a thimbleful at best of what would be a you know, the Great Lakes of what you produce in people. But, you know, what's your compelling argument for including some basic gymnastic skills work for virtually any athlete, or even just somebody who's not necessarily athletic, but they just want to be fit and healthy?
Well, I don't even know that I need to make a spiel. I'll say, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. We have athletes who in the past on first day of high school weightlifting pulled a triple body weight deadlift, never touched a barbell before in their life. Double body weight squats, not unusual at all, first time they go. We had one young man hit college and got involved having some fun with some friends weightlifting, and I think it took Dylan. Now he weighed in at about 145, so not giant. But he was benching 300 pounds in, I forget if it was 2 or 3 weeks.
Wow.
We had experimented a few years back with, we brought Jeff Servin from Trident Athletics in Tacoma, Washington down. We're considering implementing some Olympic lifting with the guys, seeing if there was a way to do it without getting neck deep in the programming and becoming lifters.
Mm-hmm.
And he pretty much had most of my older guys jerking body weight and a half in about 45 minutes.
Wow.
He also insulted us at the same time. He said, "That's amazing." And he said, "My God, your guys' technique sucks." So, you know, strength wise, I just don't know that it can be compared. We can break down all the plyometric forces and that the body's exposed to. Probably for adults, what we found out over the years is mobility.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's almost not whether or not adults have poor mobility. I'll go so far to say they have no mobility whatsoever.
Right, right.
They are crushed. They are just crushed from their desk work, and which is why the foundation courses, you know, alternates half mobility work, half strength work.
And, you know, that's been an interesting progression for me, having gone from being pretty athletic. And even when I worked in a lab, I was typically on my feet, and then mm-hmm. transitioned out of doing that type of work into sitting and writing and blogging, and shockingly developed some hip pathology, some L4, L5 disc dysfunction. It's taken the past maybe, you know, interestingly, about 6 months constructing a standing workstation, really dedicating myself to doing that, and then also motoring through a lot of the progressions that you have throughout the day. And lo and behold, that low back pathology is kind of going away. I don't have those same issues. But, you know, it's so interesting to me. And I would agree that probably the number one problem that we see at NorCal Strength and Conditioning, when we get somewhat older folks, like they can have some metabolic issues, you know, their diet's poor, they're generally inactive, but just the lack of mobility and the fragility, I guess, that people
yes.
have from that, it's almost like they're made of glass. Like there is
Absolutely.
Nothing resilient about them. Like if they fell, they would break. So it's interesting. Coach, something that's always impressed me with your methodology, you know, you get these people very, very, very strong going through the different progressions. But what was interesting to me is how conservative you are in progressing people. The exposure, like we may not see a loading increase for weeks from people. Could you talk a little bit about that, particularly within, you know, like a lot of the listeners kind of go in and out of the CrossFit scene. There's always a pushing towards, you know, this sense, you know, to quote Greg Glassman, you know, the greatest returns that we see are found with intensity. But I think that once we
I would love that one.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that once we pass a novice stage, or even when we start looking at you know, to steal something from Pavel, to look at strength as a skill, it seems like that progression needs to be very, very metered and monitored to avoid burnout and to really just get to these highest levels. Could you talk about that and really give people a sense of how slowly you progress people with regards to volume and intensity, but then how quickly they actually get very, very strong from that?
I think it's important for people to, like you said, it's important for people to understand that there's a difference between gains as a raw beginner and gains as a seasoned athlete. The higher your level of training, the fewer times you can peak for athletic competition during a year. So, for example, I can peak an athlete once, maybe 1.5 times a year, and that's at a world class level. To do more than that per year, it just won't work. The body will blow up. My concern that we see constantly with CrossFitters who are taught with a low level of strength to want to go to the well over and over and over and over is that there's only so much tread on the tires. And if you come slide into a stop sign every single time, then you're burning yourself out.
Right.
We're going to have joint issues. We're going to have central nervous system issues. We're going to have adrenal failure. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I will say that in the United States, to make the U.S. national team, and you'll see it with our world and Olympic athletes, you're automatically, once you make that team, one of the best athletes in the world. And then backstepping that, there's only a handful of people who are producing athletes at that level in the United States. And we all get there by being conservative. We don't leave things to chance. Perhaps it helps people understand that intensity only works within their individual levels of recovery, and then that in turn has biological limits that you can adapt to. For example, you know, muscle tissue replaces itself every few months. There's nothing you can do to speed it up. Bone tissue is going to completely regenerate over a period of a couple of years. What we found is that the stronger an adult athlete is, probably the more brittle and least mobile they are, the more apt they are for injury, especially a lot of CrossFitters we have coming in. We have to kind of handle them with kid's glove because they're just an injury waiting to happen.
So what's let's talk about you know, what you do to get the mobility kind of matched up for that person, but then also let's go through a little bit of a progression. You know, like you're reasonably famous now for like these front lever and planche progressions and getting people to do these, but I don't think that people really understand like how incrementally and slowly you will progress people on that loading. And maybe we could even use like the example of like a standing barbell press, just so that people, you know, like if we were to start a person and say like their one rep max was 100 pounds on the standing barbell press. Actually, let's tackle this one first. You know, how would you progress that person to getting, you know, and let's say their body weight is 150 pounds or something like that. Then how would you progress that person to that body weight standing press and then like a body weight and a quarter standing press?
With
a barbell, and using that kind of analogous to the way that you progress people, say like on planche work and rings and stuff like that. It's always when you and I have talked on the phone, it's just so impressive to me how, incremental and relatively slow the increased volume and intensity layers on with that.
For something as simple as that barbell press, I would drop them to 70%. I would test, find out what their max is, drop them to 70%, and then I'd break their increments. So say that was just for make it easy. we'll call it, that there was a, their max was going to be 36 pounds, 106. So we've got a 36 pound window. I would just break it up. So we added just 3 pounds per week. We'd do that over a 12 week training cycle.
Okay. And what type of, you know, sets and reps and frequency of exposure would the person see?
It really depends on what training effect you're looking for, whether you're wanting mass, whether you're wanting strength and stay light. You know, if we want just to build strength, then we're going to go 2-3 sets of 2-3 reps. If we're looking for middle of the road, we might go 5x5. If we're looking for building more mass, we might go up to a 3x8.
Okay.
And then just it kind of depends on the athlete also, but probably 2-3 times per week.
Okay, so you reasonably you know, high frequency, and you would probably have that exposure 2-3 times a week, regardless of what the whether it was kind of a mass oriented protocol or a more strength oriented protocol. Would that be correct?
Well, it's important to remember too that barbell training is relatively simplistic.
Right.
You know, we've got an isolated muscle group, makes life easy. Gymnastic strength training, on the other hand, like breaking rings apart, you know, a Maltese, is it pressing strength or is it pulling strength?
Right.
And the answer to that is yes.
Right.
It's both. And so training gets a lot more involved. We just had a young man. We, you know, our forum is huge now. We've got over 9,400 members. And there's always someone who is pretty sure they found a new way to reinvent the wheel. And, you know, they are like, well, you know, I just want to jump hard into ring strength. It's not going to happen, big man. You're not prepared. You're getting ready to hit some heavy tendonitis because you haven't done your preparatory work first.
Right, right.
I think the thing that people need to understand as far as gymnastic strength training is concerned is they look at the body as just a set load. This is just my body. I can kind of do what I want, when I want. It's a big buffet. I'll get to choose. And nothing could be further from the truth. We have to start from the exercises that have the greatest mechanical advantage with the best leverage. And then gradually over time, as they master those, we decrease mechanical advantage. We decrease the leverage they have. For example, in Iron Cross, we get people all the time, especially we'll get Navy SEALs and Special Forces and Delta. They're used to being studs. And they'll try to get up on rings and they'll try to go right to a cross, you know, and they blow themselves up. And what they don't realize is that an element like that, we measure in torque, which is inch pounds. And depending on your body weight and the length of your arms, you could be looking at over 4,000 inch pounds of pressure coming down on those joints.
If you've got a little bit larger, lankier of an individual, sure. Sure.
Sure. Yeah. Depending on that formula for it's pretty simple. We're going to take from center of the chest out down to the end of the wrist. We're going to multiply that by half body weight and go times two.
Right.
So fairly straightforward. But where people get caught is then they don't realize that there's specific physical structures that have to be adapted as well so that they can support that training. You know, brachialis is usually the weak link coming through the elbow there. And what we found is the stronger the guy, the more out of balance their body is. The worse their mobility is, they have no straight arm strength. They have no balance. They have no proprioception. There's just nothing there, and we have to just baby step them.
Coach, what's the, you know, a little bit of the diagnostics that you use for, you know, when you say straight arm strength? I've talked about that a bit on the podcast, but can you give folks some examples of the straight, you know, what are some straight arm strength moves, and then also how you assess that and maybe a little bit of a progression with that?
Okay. What we found as far, basically straight arm strength is anything that's going to be performed with the arms completely locked. And it's important to understand that almost straight is bent.
Right.
We go through that constantly. Excuse me. We'll get people who do bent arm crosses on rings, and they're doing bent arm Maltese, and they're so proud, and they say, "I'm almost there, coach." And you say, don't straighten your elbow. It's not ready. And sometimes they listen. Sometimes they don't. One of our old students, Johnny Sapinoso, before we got him, had come up with a good bent arm cross, and people were fussing at him. He's a strong boy. And they said, you know, straighten your elbows. And he listened, and the elbows went, and I think he was down for a good year and a half.
Wow.
And things just have to be done correctly. So what we didn't understand way back when we started working with the adult market, was how out of shape they were, that they had no core strength. And so over working with them for 7 years, I think we've got a pretty good handle on it now. I mean, there's a lot of squawk, and they say we're so hard, we're so brutal, but actually we're being pretty sensitive and easy.
Otherwise the oldsters don't come back. So yeah,
it's simply because they don't have a correct frame of reference. So we just finished a nice seminar in London, and good people, bright people, hardworking, talented, and they weren't aware they were mentally shutting down far long before they were physically shutting down. They just didn't know how to work.
Right.
And so that was an eye opener for them. They're like, "Coach, I'm getting ready to die." So, "No, it just feels that way. You're fine."
So, Coach, would a front lever? Possibly this is why you introduced the front lever and the planche as some of the first exposures. These would be kind of examples of kind of complementary straight arm work.
What we found is, front lever, as far as gymnastic strength is concerned, we rate our strength elements A through G, with G being the most advanced, and a front lever is it's an A. You know, a back lever is an A. A planche is barely a B. I mean, these are the most introductory of levels. A muscle up doesn't even exist.
Right.
You know, a muscle up's not even considered strength. What we found, though, is that when an athlete is younger and they come in, they physically are in perfect balance. Their mobility, their dynamic strength, their ability to jump and move, their maximal strength are all in excellent proportions. There's no imbalances. And adults, when they come into us, the imbalances are just everywhere. They're everywhere.
Interesting.
So what we have to do is with a young athlete, I can start training all these components at the same time. But with adults, we have to rebuild, which means we start with mobility first. Then we go into building foundational strength. We're going to do introductory bent arm work. We're going to do introductory straight arm work. Once we're going to start rebuilding shoulders, we're going to rebuild hips, we're going to rebuild knees. Once we have all that under control, that's the only time we're even going to consider moving them on to, ring work. And for the record, you know, our idea of beginning strength is probably quite a bit more than most people's. But if you haven't mastered climbing the rope with no legs, you can't do a hollow back press, basically a handstand, lower to a bent arm planche, and press back out. You're still a beginner in terms of gymnastic strength.
Right, right. Which those things are almost superhuman for most folks. Like I know for myself, the rope work would be relatively easy. That hollow press would be a pretty tall order for me right now.
We have found, it depends on the training and the progressions they've gone through. Mm-hmm. We have found for most adults a huge discrepancy between their pulling and their pressing strength.
Interesting. And typically the pulling strength being significantly stronger?
Being stronger. What tends to happen, though, is they're unaware that a metabolic rate of tendons and connective tissue is 1/10 that of muscle tissue. So they'll go and they'll start climbing the rope, and their muscle will be fine, but they've overloaded their joints. We get this all the time. So I say, you know, "Coach, I'm climbing the rope. I know it's really good for me. I got to master this. My elbows are killing me. What should I do?" I say, "Well, stop climbing the damn rope."
Right. And what typically then is, you know, how do you back folks up on that? And how do you start addressing specifically like that, you know, the bicep insertion that typically is getting inflamed in that situation?
We rub their nose in it, you know. Basically, what we always come back to is, they're excited. They're saying, we've really got rings mastered. And I was like, "Guys, here's the deal." And I said, "Rings now have been popular for coming up on almost 15 years in the fitness industry. And despite all that amount of time, no one has jack as far as ring strength is concerned.
Right.
We should be neck deep in crosses and planches on rings and reverse muscle ups. And we're not. And it's simply because they don't know how to use the tool properly. They don't know correct progressions. They don't know how to prepare the joints. And all the hours and hours and hours and years they've spent doing kipping muscle ups and all this other silly nonsense has simply set them back further and further.
And so I mean, what is the you know, let's say the person they have very Spartan access to gear. You know, they've been tinkering with climbing a rope. They're getting some bicipital tendonitis. What's a thing or two that they could continue doing that's helping them feel like they're doing something? I mean, I know.
They've got to step off. They've got to go all the way back. See, what they've done is they've tried to increase intensity and volume at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's simply playing Russian roulette. It's not a question of if you're going to get hurt. It's simply a matter of when.
Gotcha.
It's inevitable. You're going down. Once you have tendonitis, you've got to ride it out. Remember, there's 1/10 metabolic rate. So that means if it was an injury that in muscle tissue would have taken a day to heal, connective tissue is 10 days. If it's muscle tissue, it would have taken a month. If it's connective tissue, it's 10 months. And it's its metabolic rate. There's nothing you can do to speed it up. There's no therapies. There's no supplements. There's nothing you can do. Once you've fallen off the edge of the cliff, all that's left is the wait for the bottom.
Interesting. Which is similar to what we see with adrenal fatigue and all the rest of that stuff. So
exactly.
Interesting.
So you've got the best way is just to do it right from the beginning.
Well, I often wish that that was the case with nutrition, but then my, I guess it's somewhat jaded now. I guess I'm looking at it as the fact that people goof this up all the time. It's just job security in a way, even though that's a very Machiavellian way to look at it. But it's like, well...
That's a good point. We feel the same way. Like I said, we're at over 9,400 members now, and the reason they end up with us is because all those things went wrong and they got tired of it. They got tired of being sore. They got tired of being hurt. And they got tired of having no progress.
Right.
And at the end of the day, there's really only one place to end up, and that's us.
Right. So, Coach, a lot of the listeners, I think that they have somewhat of a similar background to myself, and that they're doing some, some Brazilian jiu-jitsu, they're doing some MMA, maybe they're doing some CrossFit. Actually, I'm gonna not try to orient it towards everybody. I'm just gonna orient it towards myself. So
Perfect.
So I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu 3 to 5 days a week. I've typically been doing 2 days a week in the gym, and I'll do some actually some straight arm and some bent arm work, and then a little bit of Olympic lifting, and I pretty much call it good. But I have not been following your online course. This is some stuff.
Shame on you.
Shameful. I have access to it and everything, but in my head, I've had myself convinced that I don't have time to go deeper on this stuff. What type of time commitment am I talking about to motor through the course and really do this thing correctly?
Oh goodness, we're talking a minimum of 2 to 3 hours a week.
Okay.
So spread out over 2 or 3 days. That would be warm up, your main work, maybe having some fun moving on, experiment, not training, but becoming familiar with a little bit of more advanced elements. Something that we've seen over and over and over as people from outside the gymnastics community they will look at what we do on a daily basis. They will see 4 and 5 hours of training a day. My senior athlete right now, Alan, is probably doing six per day. He's in the pipeline right now for Rio. He's doing very well. We got our fingers crossed. You need some luck, right? You got to stay healthy.
Right.
But what they'll do is they'll look from the outside in, and they will assume that large block of daily time, those multiple hours, is all strength training. And it's not the case. It's not the case. I think Alan, we're going to be looking between, even at a world-class level, he's probably doing 8 or 9 hours of physical prep per week. And that's a world-class level. And then the rest of that is skill training. Now, what we run into is we get people who don't understand that break between skill training and the physical preparation. So they just look at the total volume, and they come up with all these ridiculous programs where they want you to condition for 3-4 hours a day. They want multiple training, da, 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 da. And they really just don't have a clue that that's not how we got strong in the first place.
Right. And, you and I talked about this a lot because And you know, funny enough, to really dig back in history, Mark Twite, you know, he came into this scene early, and we were all, I think, trying to figure out if there really was a shortcut to the promised land. Like, you know, for you on the short time index side, you know, very explosive, high technicality. Not to say that mountaineering isn't highly technical, but it, you know, just a very different type of technicality. You know, I mean, we're right. talking about technicality over days typically with these situations. But, you know, you and I talked early on, like you mentioned that when you were still doing the lots of volume of gymnastics training, like you had to run to a girlfriend's house or something, and it was like 20 miles away, and you just ran, you know.
Sure.
And you're like, I basically ran a marathon, and, you know, other than like doing you know, tumbling passes, like that's what you did, you know. But because of the volume of work you were doing, there was this.
Well,
really...
I'm gonna interrupt just a second. It wasn't the volume. What it was the dynamic strength. It was the plyometric effects on the body. So, for example, we found the two things that gymnastic strength training offers that there's no other exercise modality offers is the plyometric work that we do on the body, the tight joints, the rebounding, the repulsion work, and our straight arm strength.
Okay.
So when I was a competitive athlete, what we found, of course, you know, longtime national team athlete, we were at Olympic training. I've spent more time in Olympic training center the last 10 years almost than in my own house, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. a lot of sports medicine, a lot of sports science that goes on. So we've had athletes on pressure plates and telemetry on them and measuring on even such a simple thing as a round off back handspring and right when the legs punch off the ground into a backflip, even if it's just a simple single backflip, 14 times body weight.
Right.
Monstrous amount of pressure that happens over and over and over and over and over. And what we found is the best way to strengthen tendons and connective tissue is very short, very high intensity microbursts of load. And it has to be that kind of repulsion work. And so that's why when I was young, we could go out with no effort and basically run 21 miles and not notice it.
Right.
Everything as far as a gymnast comes from there. And then we've actually found that the muscular training that we do is secondary as far as athletics are concerned.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's you look at the bicep development on a ringman. That's all from straight arm strength.
Right, which is so counterintuitive for folks. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but I mean, it's got to be done right.
And I mean, clearly, you know, there's rope climbing and there are some bent arm elements in there. But then the really, you know, like once you start getting from a Maltese and beyond that and planches on the rings and whatnot, then that's really the stimulus that's causing that really significant.
That's where
development.
The body blows up. Well, we've got rings one. Our rings one, we have four ring courses that are being released. Rings one comes out next month, and you know, though people will be excited. It's as far as ring strength is concerned, it's our first ring strength course. But where they're having trouble wrapping their head around is that it's not an introductory gymnastic strength training course. They have to have done their foundation work first, at least through a moderate level, before they should plan on being successful with rings.
Coach, you have several movements that are part of the foundation. Can you talk about those?
As far as which skills they're working on in the foundation courses?
Yeah.
We broke it out into fundamental straight arm strength, fundamental bent arm strength, fundamental leg strength. So fundamental straight arm strength, we focus on developing. These are over the span of four different courses, which are extremely detailed and exactly programmed out. There's nothing left to chance. We've learned the hard way that with adults, it's best if we spell it out.
Right.
We work on planche, we do side lever, we do front lever and manna. So that's our straight arm work, and those are not advanced straight arm strengths. Those are what we would consider introductory straight arm strengths. As far as bent arm strength, we work on developing. We start from, you know, someone barely can hold themselves up. We take them as far as pressing strength up to hollow back presses, and we start their pulling strength from basically they're strong enough to hang on some rings at a tilted angle and not fall off, all the way up to rope climbs.
Okay. And the, and once they progress through that, then we kind of have a, enough of a foundation laid with strength, connective tissue integrity, and whatnot to start thinking about, say, like the rings one course.
Exactly. Well, you know, rings, might, in a perfect world, we'd like them to go through foundation four. In reality, I understand it. See, I'm personally a very impatient person. Right, I'd rather have it today.
Right.
However, the reality of what I've done for a living for decades was putting athletes on national team, winning national championships, training for the Olympics. So in order to get what I want, I had to learn to control my impatience. So that means that in training, I'll appear to be very, very patient, but it's simply I have to go through those steps in order to get what I want.
Because otherwise you're just backtracking and dealing with injuries and taking longer to get there, or maybe not getting there at all.
Oh, exactly. What happens is you fail.
Right.
I mean, the bottom line, right? Do it right or you fail.
Right.
It's that simple, which is why 10 years of ring strength as in the fitness community and nothing to show for it. If I had spent 10 years and had the ring strength to show the fitness community has, our Olympic coach would have thrown my tail off national team coaching so fast it would have been a sonic boom.
Right. Right. So, I mean, it's again the instant gratification and not really, you know, having a little bit of a longer term goal with this stuff. So what, actually, I was going to ask you how you, you motivate people to look at that longer term, but it sounds incredibly similar to, how do you get people to want to eat better? And my only answer I've had with that, with, you know, basically about 15 years of coaching people, is I really had no idea. Like, they've got to have some innate desire to do it, you know, and no amount of cheerleading on my part I've found to be particularly effective for that.
And this might be for being a national team coach for so long, but people decide on their own level of success.
Right.
You know, if they're serious, they're going to find a way to make it happen. They're going to find the time. They're going to find the intensity. They're going to find the resources. If they're not serious, then there's now no amount of hand holding in the world that's going to make it happen.
Right. Right.
It's just not. So you'll find that those who, at least me personally, those who are really, who are dedicated and sincere, we'll support them 24/7. And those who are kind of wishy-washy and just aren't into it or are asking for shortcuts, you know what? You know, we've given you the best programs in the world. There's literally nothing better than what we have on the market. If they're not willing to trust their reputation and calm down and take care of their business, there's not a lot we can do for them.
So what I was going to ask you, you know, usually when I'm trying to get people to do tweak their diet and they're like, I don't know, what about this paleo stuff? Does this really work? And I give them, you know, try it for 30 days, see how you look, feel, and perform, track some biomarkers of health and disease and see what happens.
I'd say 12 weeks.
Okay. 12 weeks is a good, because I was going to give the caveat there that we don't know how broken and dysfunctional somebody is going in. And
yes, we do. We know how they're dysfunctional.
Just assume that they are, and that's all there is to it. Okay.
They're zombies. They should be trying out for the next World War Z movie.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Okay. That makes it easy. So, you know, for me, doing old dude Brazilian jiu-jitsu, get in, take advantage of my access to the fundamentals course and get going on that is basically, I'm smelling your shoe polish on my breath because your foot is so far up my ass right now. So is that the takeaway?
I've been awfully kind and gentle right now, but you know, basically what we run into is, you know, from that first article that we did all those years ago for Pavel, you know, we pretty much opened the door for gymnastic strength training in the marketplace. And to quantify and lay everything out correctly was a massive, massive endeavor. Our first book came out in 08, and I assumed that people's things that were second nature to me from all the years of being a national team coach, I mistakenly assumed were second nature to everyone else. Mm-hmm. That in turn led to now all these courses we have released. We've got 16 courses that are coming out. There's, for whatever reason, how this came about, a lucky circumstance. I am not the best coach in the world, nor am I the best writer in the world. But as far as a world-class coach who can write in gymnastics strength training, I don't have any of my peers as far as national team coaches, you know, that had that same combination of talents. Plus, interesting, and I don't know how to explain this without it coming across rude, but most of my peers, their life revolves around working with Olympic level athletes.
Sure.
If you're not at that level, they don't have any time for you. Well, at all.
You know, and I've found this interesting, even just trying to sniff up some adult gymnastics classes mm-hmm. at gymnastics facilities. And I could be wrong because I'm not on the inside.
You're not wrong.
But, you know, looking in, I see actually a really remarkable opportunity for gymnastics facilities to, I mean, just as both a revenue stream and also, you know, doing good by folks, because I think if you can take somebody who's never, ever, ever done, you know, like a handstand to a front roll, and they can do right. it, or, you know, being able to do a using a rebounding floor and do a backflip into a foam pit, that's more fun than any amount of bicep curls or, you know, anything. Like, doing basic gymnastic stuff is really, really fun, but it's a bugger to find any facilities where you can do it.
Right.
This is, to some degree, I think, where the CrossFit scene, it's the only place you can find a ring, you can find a rope.
Sure.
Occasionally you find somebody doing some, you know, lever work and stuff like that. And it'd be interesting if we could light a fire under some of the gymnastics facilities to offer some more adult gymnastics, you know, work for people. Once or twice in Seattle, there was a really good place that offered a great adult gymnastics class, and I got a lot out of it, and it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I would totally prefer doing that and then maybe Olympic lift one day a week, just to because I really like doing that, and I feel like it does a lot for my athleticism. If I could do that, I think I would be, you know, I'd be in hog heaven then.
What we found with adults is that it's very important to separate their strength, their physical preparation work from movement training.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, as kids, we went everywhere. We bounced off everything. We didn't plan what we were going. We didn't ever look at our watch and say, you know, it's Tuesday morning, I'm not going to go to Billy's house and train today or play today because it's my day for recovery.
Right.
You know, we went where we want it, when we want it, our whole life until we hit high school. And then we started adding structured athletic training on top of this huge matrix of just general activity. The body was prepared for it. Now, as adults, we've gone the other way. They're trying to do very specific training, but we now have no outside matrix of general movement in most cases.
Hmm.
The body's not prepared to move. The collagen is breaking down. The muscle tissue is breaking down. Range of motion is gone. Strength is gone. And what they have done, though, is they've done strict barbell work. So in a very narrow range of motion, they're strong. But they're also rigid and they're also brittle, which means they can generate enough force that if they get outside, their knee doesn't track over that foot. They can generate enough force to actually break themselves.
Right.
Weekend warrior syndrome.
Coach, I've never seen much on this. How many, you know, gymnasts that say don't make it to a you know, world caliber competitive level, how many of those folks continue doing gymnastics later in life, like just as a way to kind of stay in shape and just have some fun? Or is the fun done? Like, they've done so much of it, they're like, I'm playing tennis, I'm getting out of this.
Well, you know, that in the 60s and that, it was common. There had been a photo from maybe 1968 showing a man who was in his 60s doing an Iron Cross at a competition. Mm. And it wasn't a big deal. They simply had him listed as oldest competitor in the meet.
Right.
Part of it, that's why gymnastic bodies exist as it is, because after I stopped my competitive career, you know, you were supposed to, gymnastics is done, now you're going to go run, now you're going to go lift. And, you know, I hit the gym, I hit running, and I was this big stud. You know, I'm a little guy, 135, 140 pounds, and I'm training with the big guys who are 200, 220, because we use the same weight on the bar.
Right.
And they got the biggest kick out of that. And I thought at the time it was because, you know, I was gifted. It had nothing to do with me being gifted. It had to do with the years of gymnastics preparation that allowed me to be that athletic. But as time went on, athleticism began to decline because as I didn't know then, connective tissue starts to decondition. So I had maybe a 10-year window where everything was good, and then after that, performance dropped substantially.
Interesting. Interesting. And so what does your daily regimen look like now, or weekly? Like, do you still do some tumbling? Do you hit some ring work? Like, what does your program look like right now?
Well, I wouldn't want to share that per se, because what'll happen is it'd be like looking at someone who's a high level lifter or a high level jiu-jitsu player, and they're going to want to go and they're going to want to do the same.
Right.
So my best recommendation for them would be to start with their foundation work, start with their handstand work, build a physical structure that can actually handle the demands that you're going to place upon it. For those guys, you know, we've had with older population, we found that mobility work is their workout.
Right, right.
Just right. Quivering, and now for our mobility work is different though. We're doing active flexibility where everything is strength related, and we found that's probably the 70% of what most adults need to do in terms of mobility, because they're so tight. If they try to do passive flexibility, nothing's going to happen.
So talk a little bit about that. Like I remember when we spoke earlier, you said that you mainly use weights to get mobile.
Absolutely.
Talk to people about that.
Well, we'll break it apart for so we have a dislocate. I think most people are familiar with a dislocate using a long dowel. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll grab the bar, maybe double shoulder widths, some guys longer, and they're basically going to rotate it over their head, back behind them to their hip, and then back over the top. Most people get very, very little bit of benefit from that. What we found is we have to add load to that movement. So we will start with 2, maybe 3 kilograms on the bar. Over time, full dislocates, we're looking at slow, controlled 5-second reps. Over time, probably a period of months, we're going to bring the hands in so they're maybe, even if they're extremely tight shoulders, they should be able to get just a hand's width outs on each side outside of shoulder width on their grip.
Okay.
Once they reach that narrowness, we go back out wide again. We increase the load, and we begin the process again. We have found that weighted shoulder dislocates like that are just a panacea for the shoulders. They, in my opinion, they are the best shoulder exercise, bar none. Nothing comes close.
Interesting. Even more so than, say, like a skin the cat or something, I guess, because of the ability to progressively load that.
Oh, absolutely. We've got athlete that does those dislocates with a 45-pound Olympic bar.
Wow.
We've got people on the forum who are doing, usually at a minimum 10 kilograms. We've got a few who are up at 20 now.
Wow.
But, you know, that was calm. That was gradual. That happened over an 8-9 month period.
Right.
And what we're finding is we're starting to get a lot of, I won't call it blowback, but a lot of feedback from physical therapists around the world, because a lot of what we do is, everything we do is pragmatic, right? It's to get a result, which is to have a superior physical performance, which is to make a national team, which is to go to Olympics, which is to win an Olympic championship. Everything we do has a reason. There's nothing we do that's opinion-based. It works or it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, it's gone. We don't have time for this. We find something else, we put it in its place. This worked, good, we're keeping this. Something better comes, we'll replace it. But until then, this is what we do.
Right.
So we found with this active flexibility, that's what allows you to increase your athleticism. So for example, someone has extreme shoulder mobility, and we get this in some women, but they only have a partial range of strength. That deficit between how far where they can be strong and then how far past they go back just being kind of open and loose, that increases their chance of injury tremendously. So we want to close that gap. We don't want a giant deficit. We want everywhere their body can move for it to be expressing itself through strength. Now they're stable, now they're safe.
Through the full range of movement.
And full range of motion.
There's not a gap in their interest.
There's no gap.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I'm thinking like six different things here, and one of them, and it's a little bit of a leading question, but you know, in a way, I kind of feel like if one is at that spot where they cannot do, say, like the reasonably hands close together, dislocate, then that's mm-hmm. kind of a sign of shoulder pathology and potential problems. I think
yes.
that one of the things that CrossFit brought to the table was actually talking about the kip. You know, like
you're gonna make me go down this road.
We're gonna go down this road a little bit,
okay.
But you know. I felt like as a diagnostic criteria, if one could not kip, then that was a sign of shoulder pathology. And we had to do some things to be
sure.
able to get the shoulder to a spot where they could do it. But then the thing was, is that kipping movement was a means to an end. It was not the thing to do hundreds potentially of specific repetitions just in, say, like a kipping pull-up format. Like, what I mean, do you kind of agree with that? I mean, you and I are
approach it a bit different. And
okay.
Now, to my mind, a kipping pull-up is something that should not be done by beginners for a variety of reasons.
Agreed. Totally.
One, We're taking someone who is generally not strong enough to do a dead hang pull-up, and when they hit the bottom of that movement, the muscle tissue isn't enough to control it. They're going to hit the bottom of the range of motion with 2 to 3 times body weight. Muscle can't handle it, so now we're bouncing off connective tissue in the shoulders.
Right.
When they also hit the bottom, because of all that pressure, we have someone who's tight and brittle, the very movement that they're doing is going to force the shoulders to go past their natural range of motion. So we have a load that's too high, we've gone too far past their natural range of motion, and we're bouncing off connective tissue. There's a reason that beginners, and then we're putting them in high volume and high intensity. I've never, until the kipping pull-ups became widespread, seen a rash of slap tears in adult fitness people ever until they got exposed to that prematurely.
Right.
I know that some people, they're saying, no, there's no evidence. Guys, there's evidence. This is our bread and butter. This is what we live for. Bottom of a ring swing, we hit 10 times body weight, 7 to 10, depending on your technique. But
could I throw something in there on the evidence thing? Because I've done a couple of pieces on like evidence-based medicine and stuff like that. And it's ironic in some ways, because on the one hand, if we use, say, a coaching methodology, like you said, what you're doing is for a dedicated focus goal of like going to the Olympics, winning an Olympic championship. And there are mm-hmm. there's not really randomized controlled studies that dictate what you're doing, right? I mean, it's learned.
No, it's
empirical.
It's kind of science.
Yeah,
empirical.
It's largely empirical. But then when we start, and that's okay, and that will run the gamut from like Olympic lifting to powerlifting, you know, all this different stuff. That's okay. But then when we start raising some questions about injury potentiality, and it's like, I've observed that, you know, unprepared people have more shoulder problems.
Absolutely.
Then the detractors on the other side of that start saying, well, where's the randomized controlled trial? And to me, it's a bit disingenuous. It's like, well, if we need an RCT for that, then we need an RCT to describe
everything that we do as a coach. Otherwise, we have no validity in trusting our coaching at all. Like it's you're creating a double. People are creating a double standard there. Like if coaches are competent enough to bring people to a reasonably high level doing something, and then they say, you know, I really feel like there's some problems with jumping people into this progression in the way that we're doing it. There's probably as much validity in that observation as the observations that brought them to the success that they've had, if that's not too convoluted a way to say that.
Yeah, it's to my mind, it's the blind leading the blind. You know, we get people who have a background in general conditioning, but no background in plyometric work, which is what a kipping pull-up is.
Right.
Right? It's plyometric work, but they have no background in how to safely build the body up to handling that. They just jump into it. To my mind, that's ludicrous. That's the same as laying someone on a bench, loading 300 pounds on the bar, taking the bar off the rack and handing it to them, saying, you know, good luck to you, buddy. I'll see you in a minute.
Well, you know what? And this, I so wish that I have still some video of you speaking at that Golden Colorado piece. I have some video of Mark Twight speaking at that Golden Colorado piece. There was another individual there that observed that they saw endurance athletes who were getting chronically injured in the hips and in the knees.
Sure.
And when these individuals were tested for just doing an air squat, they could barely do an air squat, and they certainly couldn't do 10 or 20 air squats. And so the argument was made that these people needed some basic strength work and mobility work. And you would do that before doing the dynamic loading of running.
Sure, absolutely.
And that
because if you think about it, the same thing that what makes running possible is the same thing that makes acrobatics or all athletic movement possible is the structure of the arch in the foot, the thickness of the Achilles tendon, the oversized knee joint we have, the strong discs that run up through the back, even the ligaments that hold the head steady as we move. All of that's job is to accept and then repulse impact as we're moving around in this world, in this environment that we're in. So you have to first build a structure that can handle absorbing those forces before they can repulse those forces.
It absolutely. I completely agree. It's just interesting to me that there's still some kind of push back at the argument that doing some sort of a strength oriented progression on the pull up is somehow a fallacious argument, but there's still same crew of folks will argue it's
marketing. I look at it that it's just like a gene commercial, right?
Right.
When they put a gene commercial up, do they ever now talk about the wonderful material and the strength of the stitching and look at these quality of rivets? They never ever do. That's not interesting. So the commercials come on, and what do they show? They show good-looking, athletic, sexy people having fun. And by the way, they just happen to be wearing these jeans.
Right, right.
To my mind, that's the appeal of the kipping pull-ups for someone coming in. You take someone who has not a prayer in the world of doing a regular pull-up. You throw them on there. You let them bounce off some connective tissue a few times. Their eyes light up. This is a lifetime goal. They're so happy. They're pumped. Where do I sign?
Right. Right, right.
It's disingenuous. You know, what we want is, it's not enough to train them today. We have to plan for that. We need to train them next week and next year as well. We want to do no long-term harm. It's not enough to have a customer in and get a few months out of them before they blow up.
Right, right, absolutely. Well, Coach, we've chawed up an hour. I told you that we were going to do a quickie, but I don't get to chat with you that often, and I've considered you one of my mentors for a long, 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 long time. So,
thank you very much.
This was I'm sure everybody else enjoyed it too, but this was basically an hour of Rob with Coach Summer. So, is there anything else that we missed that you want to talk about? I definitely want to let folks know about your ongoing seminar series, particularly the one that's going to be at NorCal Strength and Conditioning in Chico, March 22nd and 23rd. And I'm going to be doing a little, probably about an hour and 10 minute nutrition piece in addition to the gymnastics body seminar. But is there anything else that you want to cover?
Well, I know you're saying an hour, but I don't think you can talk for only an hour. So we're looking forward to more.
Yet again, I'm sick of hearing me talk, so I want to do as little as possible so I can listen to you guys. So I will do whatever folks want, but I'm way more interested in what you're doing than what I'm doing. So,
well, I think the main thing is I want people to get in the habit of vetting their sources of information. We get a lot of people coming into the forum who are broken because they took advice from someone who once hung on a pair of rings. You need someone who has produced someone up at the highest levels as far as strength. Remember, we separate all skill training from our strength training and then backstepped it down. How do you get there? I think if they'll put things in perspective of not trying to bench 100 pounds, but how long would it take to get to benching 300 pounds? They wouldn't expect it tomorrow. And gymnastics strength training is no different. We're looking, depending on the athleticism they're bringing to the table when they start, the mobility they're bringing, we're looking at a 4 to 6 year window to have cross on rings, plange on rings, you know, all the rope climb, all the things that are under it. We're looking at a 4 to 6 year window, which if you think about it for Olympic lifting, for anything that's high level athletics, is about how long it takes the body to physically adapt to the new demands that are being placed on it.
Right.
So I want them to start approaching gymnastic strength training with that same degree of patience. They don't expect a 300 pound bench. They don't expect a body weight snatch overnight. You can't expect cross, press, handstand, plange on rings overnight either. It's got just the same way that Olympic coach will bring them in and put an empty dowel in their hand. We start at the very, very basics with us. We'll get people who will look at the courses and they'll glance at the course and they'll say, well, that's so simple, and they'll blow it off. We don't need them to glance at it. We need them to get in there and actually try to do the mastery sets. Usually that opens their eyes and they find out that they're not nearly as studly as they thought they were.
Right, right. Well, and I think it's worth mentioning with that too. Something that I've always liked about gymnastics, weightlifting, sprinting, specifically gymnastics, even more so than the Olympic weightlifting, is the characteristics. I guess the attributes that you get from gymnastics, you won't get those attributes from just weight training. Now, everybody,
that's true.
You've got different people have different needs and all that stuff. And everybody needs to find their own way to do things. But it is interesting that you could produce a 300 pound bench from doing gymnastic strength work. But then you also have all of these other characteristics, including just the structural integrity and the soft tissue integrity and the balance that you won't get from these other endeavors. And so I think that that's kind of and this is kind of a realization I'm having even as I'm talking about it, when you start talking about a return on investment, even though it looks like it may be a long-term, process to get to, say, like a planche on the rings or a Maltese or something like that, all of these other attributes that go along with that, how much time peripherally would you need to do while doing a barbell press and bench press? Mm-hmm. Would you need to do to be able to get the shoulder integrity and whatnot? And really, it's not even a legit question because you can't really get there by doing things other than kind of doing the gymnastic stuff. But at the end of the day, even though it looks like a long investment, kind of slow return, really when you look at everything you're getting out of it, not just simply the ability to do that one particular technique, but all of the joint integrity and the proprioception and the injury prevention, then you're getting an enormous amount out of that.
Oh, it's huge. Now, I do want to clarify too that I'm not against weight training and I'm not against people doing barbell work. I like it when it's the right time in their training.
Mm-hmm.
For example, to my mind, if they can't do all the knee mobility that we do with our athletes, if they haven't mastered single leg squats, I don't understand why they're putting weight on their back.
Right, right.
If you haven't taken care of first things first, what are you thinking? Or if you haven't mastered a rope climb with no legs, why are you adding weight to your pull-ups?
Right.
it just boggles my mind. I think people are premature. Now, I will say that without exception, over the years, for example, at seminars, my athletes have outjumped everyone, always. No one's even come remotely close to them. We always crushed them if they only trained a single modality. If it was the recon Marines, they were so happy when we finally got to, we did a private seminar for them. When we finally got to legs, they were like, oh, we're so tired of getting our nose rubbed in this and failing. This is our moment to shine. And we crushed them.
Mm-hmm.
We crushed them. Now, that being said, two people over the years have outjumped my athletes. And the ones who did were doing a combination of Olympic lifting and gymnastic strength training.
Hmm.
That's what I'm interested in exploring now, you know, as we're not, you know, I'm not responsible now for putting people on national team. You know, I have more free time. I think that might be the sweet spot done correctly.
Right.
Done correctly. That could have some very, very interesting athletic returns.
Right. Very cool, Coach. Well, everybody should. We will have links to the gymnasticsbodies.com website. We'll have links to the upcoming seminars.
And check out our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is cranking. Lots of great information there. Some beautiful graphics. I think, goodness, we've been exploding. We have not worked it except since this summer. I think we started at 400 likes, and now we're over 22,000.
Nice. Awesome.
So
very cool.
We're coming along. We use that for a lot of announcements. Basically, how we work is we use Facebook for general announcements, and then our forum is where we have our in-depth conversations and discussions.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, we'll get links to all that. I'll make sure that Squatchy and Corey or Orich get connected on that so that we have links.
Excellent.
For all that stuff. Awesome.
Perfect.
Coach.
Well, all right.
I'm looking
thank
forward
you, Rob.
To seeing you in person in March, and you have thoroughly lit a fire under my backside to get in and start going through the foundational
should.
Programs. So
should I bring a fire extinguisher for you?
We'll see. We'll see if I've blown up and I've failed miserably by then. But you know, it's I think it's, you know, it's again worth mentioning. I'm 42 years old. I'm still at the early cycle of this whole Brazilian jiu-jitsu thing, but the little bit of gymnastics type exposure that I've had via Capoeira, via some of your work, and I almost hesitate to even you know, mention your work, because I've been so spotty at implementing the legit progressions. But that said, like I've been very fortunate in injury prevention. I have great athleticism, really good mobility on the mat. You know, I'm rolling with guys that are, you know, 60 pounds heavier and 20 pounds younger, and I'm doing fine with that.
It's
hard.
Nice.
Work, but you know, if I didn't have this mobility and kind of strength background and the proprioception, I'd be getting crushed. It wouldn't be nearly
Absolutely.
As much fun. So I'm actually excited, and I've been very much in a rut on my strength and conditioning. So this is the perfect argument for me to get in and do something different and follow an actual coach so that I'm not making this stuff up on my own. So there you go.
Perfect.
I think Dan John said, he who has himself as a coach has an idiot for a coach. So it's time to hand over the reins to somebody else.
I'm not sure I want to call myself an idiot.
Well, just say that your wife does your coaching then. So you can always, you know, kind of wink, wink, nod, nod that one. So
that works for me.
Yeah. Well, awesome, Coach. Thank you so much for being on. And I'm sorry I held up your family from going to get breakfast, but this was really good.
I appreciate it, Rob. No, I enjoyed it myself.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.